Children, I have a question for you. Have you ever planted a seed or seeds? Perhaps you've taken a little cup and you've planted a seed in it and you've watered it. If you did that, what did you want to have happen? What did you want the seed to do? Grow, that's right. You wanted the seed to sprout and to grow. But did that happen with all the seeds that you planted? Maybe, maybe not. My experience is that it doesn't always happen that way. Now, from time to time, our family has taken a stab at planting a vegetable garden. Note I don't say that we actually gardened. I just say that we took a stab at it. And we have planted some seeds, and sometimes we get small plants, and the results have varied. We've had tomatoes and green peppers that have produced very well, carrots that sprouted a little and then they withered away, and watermelons that rotted on the vine. Many seeds were planted, but in the end, they didn't all produce. In our passage today, Jesus tells us a story about sowing seeds. Now, that's like planting seeds in a garden. And the seeds in his story didn't all sprout and become fruitful either. Now, Jesus didn't tell this story to give gardening tips. It was a parable, which we'll see is a mysterious form of teaching that reveals truth to some while concealing it to others. On the surface, the parable is about agriculture, but it is really about the kingdom of God, the kingdom that is breaking into history in the ministry of Jesus. It is this parable and the ones that follow in this chapter in which Jesus gives greater insight into the nature of his kingdom for those who have ears to hear. Now, this passage is divided into three sections. Some scholars say this is another one of those Mark and sandwiches that we talked about last week. We're going to examine it according to this three-part structure. First of all, the parable itself in verses 1 through 9. Then the purpose of parables in verses 10 through 12. And then the parable interpreted in verses 13 through 20. The parable itself, the purpose of parables, and the parable interpreted. And we'll see this passage reveals truths about Jesus and his kingdom ministry that have application in our day as well as in his. So we begin with the parable itself. At the end of chapter 3, Jesus was in a house surrounded by followers while his family was outside. The insiders of the new Israel were gathered at his feet while the outsiders were literally outside the house. Now, as chapter 4 begins, we have a change of scene. Verse 1, and again, he began to teach by the sea, and a great multitude was gathered to him, so that he got into a boat and sat in it on the sea, and the whole multitude was on the land facing the sea. This is a rather elaborate description, but when you come to such descriptions, you want to sort of picture it in your mind. So what's the picture here? Well, once again, Jesus is by the Sea of Galilee. We last saw him there in chapter 3 when the crowds came from the four points of the compass, and they were pressing him so much that he had to have a boat ready just in case he needed to protect himself. Well, the crowd is here again, and this time he avails himself of the boat. Jesus sits in the boat. Sitting was the posture of a Jewish teacher in that day, and that is the position Jesus takes. The text actually says Jesus got into a boat and sat on the sea. That sounds a bit awkward, sitting on the sea, but it may be an allusion to Psalm 29:10, which declares, Yahweh sits enthroned over the flood. Now, if that is the case, Mark is once again ascribing to Jesus divine prerogatives, but he's doing so obliquely. Later on, he will describe how this one sitting on the sea will also walk on the sea. So Jesus is on the sea, the multitude is on the land. Mark chooses his words carefully to stress this. When we get to Jesus' interpretation of his parable, we'll see the significance of Mark's phrasing. So the stage is set with Jesus in the boat, on the sea, in the posture of a teacher, as the crowd on the land faces him. The scene is a natural amphitheater where Jesus' voice would carry well over the water. And now we get to the parable itself, verses 2 through 9. Then he taught them many things by parables, and said to them in his teaching, "Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow. And it happened as he sowed that some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds of the air came and devoured it. Some fell on stony ground, where it did not have much earth, and immediately it sprang up because it had no depth of earth. When the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. But other seed fell on good ground and yielded a crop that sprang up, increased and produced, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. And he said to them, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." And notice how Jesus begins and ends with a focus on hearing. The first thing he says is a command to the crowd, listen. And the last thing he says is another command, let him hear. Clearly, Jesus' parables are meant to be heard. And while we'll see this involves more than just vibrations on eardrums, the proper thing to do when Jesus is teaching is to give him your full attention. So he began, "Behold, a sower went out to sow." Now, in that time, seeds were not generally planted in the ground the way we plant them today. Rather, a sower walked through a field casting seeds all around him on the ground as he walked. Perhaps you can picture that famous Van Gogh painting of such a scene. That is the picture we're given here. Though the word seed never appears, it's supplied to fill out the meaning in some of the translations. And Jesus proceeds to tell us the various outcomes of this sowing. And it happened, as he sowed, that some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds of the air came and devoured it. So some seed fell along the path. One common practice in that day was to sow the seed and then come later to plow it under. Now, we're not told if that was the plan here, but this seed never makes it into the ground. It falls along the path, the hard ground, and it's eaten by birds. Now, we have a bird feeder. There was a time when we actually filled it with seeds, and we would see birds come down and swoop down and eat the seed, and sometimes we would have it spill out on the ground, and they would come and get that seed as well. I can imagine birds were quite happy to find seeds laying along the path. For them, it was just a meal. But then we read, some fell on stony ground where it did not have much earth. And immediately it sprang up because it had no depth of earth. When the sun was up, it was scorched. And because it had no root, it withered away. Now, don't picture this stony ground as soil with lots of rocks on the surface. It is soil that have rocks just below the surface. That is why we're told it had no depth of earth. Now, you might not have known the stones were there until the plants sprang up so quickly. And that quick sprouting might have looked promising, but it was due to the fact that they simply couldn't grow deeper. So instead of healthy downward growth of the roots, there was quick upward growth. But you see, without an adequate root system, the plants were scorched by the sun and they withered away. And then Jesus said, some seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. So this seed also has seemed to have sprouted, but the thorns grow up and choke it so that it doesn't produce anything. You know, if you have a garden, you're supposed to weed it. Again, we've not always been such good gardeners in that regard, but you're supposed to weed it. Thorns and other things can grow up, and they can choke them out. So far, things aren't looking good thus far in this matter of sowing. Birds have eaten seed that never made it into the ground. Seeds that did make it into the ground have germinated into plants that have been scorched by the sun or choked by thorns. But thankfully, that doesn't account for all the seed. For we read, but other seed fell on good ground and yielded a crop that sprang up, increased and produced, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. The seed that fell on good ground was amazingly productive. Now, scholars tell us that an 8 or a 10-fold increase was considered a good harvest. A 30, 60, or 100-fold increase would be virtually miraculous. We read of a similar harvest in Genesis 26:12. Then Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and Yahweh blessed him. In Isaac's case, a 100-fold increase at the harvest was a sign of divine blessing. And Jesus' hearers might have inferred that to be the case in his parable. What other explanation could there be for such success? And then Jesus abruptly concludes his teaching, and he said to them, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Now, put yourself in the sandals of someone standing on the shore listening to Jesus tell this parable from the boat. You have followed the story. You can picture it in your mind. But what does it mean? You've heard, but have you really heard? Sometimes people say that Jesus spoke in parables using images people could understand in order to teach clearly. But that simply is not the case. The crowd could follow the story. They could picture it in their mind. But I'm sure quite a few of them were left scratching their heads wondering, what's the point? We know how to plant seeds. We know how to harvest. Even Jesus' disciples were baffled, as we'll see in the next section. So that brings us to the purpose of parables in general. Verses 10 through 12, we begin. But when he was alone, those around him with the 12 asked him about the parable. Now again, this is a change of scene. It's worded rather oddly. We're told that Jesus is alone, and then we're told that there's others around him along with the 12. Obviously, he's not really alone. The point is that this is no longer a scene with the multitude. Jesus is once again here surrounded by his closest followers, as he had been at the house in the end of chapter 3. And Jesus responds to their question about the parable. And he said to them, "To you it has been given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God. But to those who are outside, all things come in parables, so that," and here he quotes from the Old Testament, "seeing they may see and not perceive, and hearing they may hear and not understand, lest they should turn and their sins be forgiven them." So we're back to the theme of insiders and outsiders. Jesus is about to explain the parable to his closest followers, revealing to them something of the mystery of the kingdom. So this parable is about the kingdom of God, but only insiders are going to know that. The outsiders just hear this agricultural story. And Jesus says this is specifically so that they won't understand. Far from speaking in parables to make things clear, Jesus says he tells parable to make sure some things aren't clear to many people. And Jesus quotes from Isaiah 6 here. And we need to go back and look at that passage that we read as our Old Testament reading today in context to understand what Jesus means in this rather strange saying. Isaiah 6 begins with the vision granted to Isaiah of Yahweh seated upon his heavenly throne, high and lifted up. And when Yahweh concludes the vision by asking, "Who will go for us?" the prophet Isaiah answers, "Here am I, send me." And the verses that follow, quoted by Jesus, are a record of Isaiah's commissioning as a prophet. "And he," that is Yahweh, "said, go and tell this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and return and be healed." Now, Isaiah is somewhat baffled by this call to a prophetic ministry that is guaranteed to be rejected. So he asked, Lord, how long? He's saying, how long do I have to keep this up? And the Lord answers, until the cities are laid waste and without inhabitant, the houses are without a man, the land utterly desolate, Yahweh has removed men far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. You see, Isaiah's ministry involves judgment falling upon Judah. He will preach, they will not listen, they will be judged. But judgment is not the final word. For the Lord continues, but yet a tenth will be in it, and will return and be for consuming as a terebinth tree or as an oak, whose stump remains when it is cut down. So the holy seed shall be its stump. Beyond judgment, which in this case is going to be the exile to Babylon, there will be restoration. The image of a holy seed is used here to speak of growth on the far side of judgment. Now, why does Jesus reach back to this passage to explain his ministry of speaking in parables? Well, like Isaiah's, his teaching will be rejected by many in Israel. We've already seen rejection by scribes, Pharisees, Herodians. We've already been told that Jesus will ultimately be betrayed by one of the 12. You see, Jesus' prophetic ministry is like Isaiah's prophetic ministry because rejection of him will bring judgment on Israel. The outsiders to the new Israel hear the parables, but they don't hear with understanding. They have not chosen to sit at the feet of Jesus. And judgment will come upon them, a theme that will become explicit later in the gospel. It is only the insiders who are told the mystery of the kingdom. When the old Israel is judged, it is the new Israel gathered around Jesus that will rise up like a holy seed on the far side of that judgment. Such is the import of Jesus quoting from Isaiah as he explains why he teaches in parables. It is a method purposely chosen to reveal to some while it conceals from others. Now, having offered this explanation of the purpose of parables, Jesus proceeds to explain the parable he has just spoken to the insiders gathered around him. So we come to the parable interpreted beginning at verse 13. And he said to them, "Do you not understand this parable? How then will you understand all the parables?" You see, Jesus indicates here that understanding this parable is in some sense necessary for understanding all of his parables. This is a paradigmatic. It is a parable about parables. He says, the sower sows the word. Now remember that in the parable itself, we're not told what the sower sows. As I mentioned, even the word seed isn't there. It's just sort of implied in people's minds. And that is, of course, what we're expected to picture. That is what a sower sows. He sows seeds. But now we're told how to interpret that picture when we're told the sower sows the word. We have a sower. He is sowing, and he is sowing the word. So who is the sower? Well, who is it that has been speaking a word? The implication here clearly is that the primary sower is Jesus himself. Think back to the opening scene. I mentioned some significance to Mark's word choice. He pictures Jesus sitting on the sea and the crowd on the land, but the word he uses for land is not the word for beach or shore, which is used elsewhere in the Gospels. He chooses a more generic word that can mean land, ground, or earth, and he uses the same word to describe the location of the people that Jesus uses of where the seed is sown in the parable. If we were to translate it consistently, here is what we'd get. Jesus is on the sea speaking in parables to those on the ground, and he tells a parable about sowing seed on the ground. And now we know that the seed is the word. Jesus is the sower, and the people are to be associated with the ground, which they've already been associated with by Mark's description. And they reflected various conditions of the ground that led to different results in the parable. And now Jesus explains these conditions. First, he says, and these are the ones by the wayside where the word is sown. When they hear, Satan comes immediately and takes away the word that was sown in their hearts. Remember the birds that ate up the seed before it got into the soil. Jesus says that is a picture of what Satan does to some who hear the word. Satan comes immediately and works so that the word never gets established in their heart. Jesus' word, as it were, goes in one ear and out the other. And don't we all know people who have this response to the gospel? They hear it, but they act as if it means nothing to them. In one ear and out the other, Satan is taking it away. Well, Jesus continues, these likewise are the ones sown on stony ground who, when they hear the word, immediately receive it with gladness. And they have no root in themselves, and so endure only for a time. Afterward, when tribulation or persecution arises for the word's sake, immediately they stumble. So here, remember the ground that has stones below the surface, immediately below the surface. The seed that fell there shot up quickly, but it did so because it couldn't spread roots downward, so it had growth upward. And that is how some people respond to the word. They show initial enthusiasm. But just as there was no root to that seed because of the rocks, so there is no root to the word in the lives of these people. And when that word leads to tribulation or persecution, they abandon it. They cast it aside. You see, it never really took root in their lives, despite appearances. And their refusal to suffer for it demonstrates that fact. And it is a sad fact that we do see those raised in the church who make a profession of faith, who seem to have a reality of Christ in their lives, but then something comes and they walk away from it. Too often young people, when they get out from home, they say they're free. No more church. And they start getting influenced by the world. And they start realizing there's a cost to stand for Jesus, and they decide they're not ready to pay that cost. And so they leave him aside. Jesus continues, now these are the ones sown among thorns. They are the ones who hear the word, and the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things enter in, choking the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Those thorns that choked out the newly germinated plants are the allure of the world and its wealth. And that is what so many people choose to pursue rather than obedience to Jesus. For as he says elsewhere, you cannot serve God and mammon. Choose riches above Jesus, and you'll never bear fruit as part of his kingdom. You will be choked out as those thorns choked out those sprouted seeds. But Jesus says, these are the ones sown on good ground. Those who hear the word, accept it, and bear fruit. Some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. Now we revisit that unexpectedly happy ending to the parable. Despite all that seed that never bears fruit, the harvest is still miraculous. There are some who not only hear the word, but really accept it in their hearts. And it's interesting that the verb tenses change at this point. All the negative actions and the preceding three examples have been in the aorist tense, which speaks of a once-for-all done action. Their listening to the word was superficial, in one ear and out the other. They heard Jesus and moved on unchanged. Here at verse 21, the present tense is used, signifying a continual, ongoing hearing of the word. You see, those who are true disciples really hear the word of Jesus. They hear it, they receive it, it bears fruit in their lives, and they want to continue hearing it. These are the ones who have ears to hear. These are the ones to whom God has revealed the mystery of the kingdom. Well, why is this parable so important? Why is understanding it necessary to understanding all the others? Well, I think the answer is that this parable gives us a picture of the ministry of Jesus. He is the one sowing the word as he speaks in parables. But the responses to that word vary. We've already seen many in this gospel who heard Jesus but didn't have ears to hear. In one way or another, this describes the scribes, the Pharisees, the Herodians. They heard word from Jesus and about Jesus, but that word didn't take root in their hearts. And we will keep seeing responses like those described in this parable as the gospel continues. The crowds will dissipate. Their interest in Jesus shown to be ephemeral. The rich young ruler will choose riches over discipleship with Jesus. One of the things this parable does is prepare the disciples for the rejection of Jesus. Just as Isaiah's message was rejected by the bulk of the Jews in his day, so Jesus' message would be rejected by many in his day. And the disciples would face that in their ministry as well, for we must remember them that Jesus is training them to go forth and to proclaim the word of the kingdom. They should not be surprised when that teaching is not always embraced in faith. There will be times for shaking the dust off their feet and moving on. Jesus is preparing them for what lies ahead. As the proclamation of the coming of the kingdom in Jesus draws some into the new Israel, it simultaneously hardens others who refuse to leave the old Israel or their old way of life. As Jesus indicates by allusion to Isaiah 6, the prospect for them is judgment. The new Israel is new wine that will burst the old wineskins. There can be no neutrality about Jesus. But we must remember that the final word of the parable is about that bountiful harvest. Despite how bleak things look as one surveys the fruitless results of much of the sowing, Jesus indicates that in the end, the harvest will be miraculous in its magnitude. It will far outstrip even the best of ordinary harvests. And that points to the fact that like Isaac's hundredfold harvest, it will be great only because of the blessing of God. The blessing of God upon the word that is sown. As disciples looked around through the course of Jesus' ministry, they didn't see the full harvest. They encountered many without ears to hear. They would ultimately witness the death of Jesus the sower himself. Following Jesus would lead them into persecution, and for some, to the death of martyrdom. That great harvest was still in the future, even as it is still in the future for us. But this is where history is heading. Brothers and sisters, we need to believe this. No matter what is going on in the world around us, no matter how bleak contemporary events seem to be, that bountiful harvest is where history is heading, and you can take Jesus' word on it. So what are you and I called to do? Well, what did Jesus say? Listen, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. And I would ask you, are you doing that? Are you really listening to Jesus? Children, this is a question for you. Are you listening when Jesus speaks to you as the Bible is read, as it is taught to you in family worship at home, in Sunday school, and during the worship service? Are you listening as best as you can, trying to learn all that you can about Jesus? Or does it go in one ear and out the other? I encourage you to take every opportunity you have to learn from the Bible, because this is what God will bless to make you fruitful for his kingdom. And adults, you should ponder the very same question. Do you have ears to hear? Do you really have ears to hear? As part of the new Israel, the church, You are called to listen continually to Jesus. You're also called, like the disciples of old, to proclaim the word of his kingdom, to spread the good news about Jesus. But learn from this parable. Don't be surprised when many reject that message. Don't be surprised when some seem to respond positively, even enthusiastically, and later fall away. Don't be surprised when some choose the world and its wealth over the true king of this world. And most of all, don't give up in discouragement. This is exactly what Jesus said would happen. Such people will one day face Jesus as their judge. Your call and my call is to be faithful in proclamation, trusting God for the results. And take heart in the promise of that great harvest to come. Live by faith, not by sight. Invest yourself in the kingdom that will be victorious. Keep listening to Jesus. Receive his word into your heart and go forth in his strength to bear spiritual fruit for his honor and for his glory. Let us pray.